The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So the shutdown is effectively over because Democrats caved.
White House is taking a victory lap after Democrats in the Senate caved and voted to reopen the government.
They got a deal to make a deal, maybe.
Democrats, on Monday, after a three-day shutdown, have relented, accepted nearly all White House terms.
Guys, that's why the Democratic base is clearly worried that they are getting played.
Is this a good deal for Chuck Schumer?
No, it's a terrible deal.
It seemed like everybody was losing. It seemed like Democrats maybe lost this fight.
Democrats lost the shutdown war.
Democrats wanted a deal on DACA, but all they got was a promise.
They are getting their butts kicked.
Truth is, the Dems got spooked and the GOP got a boost.
The progressive groups are very unhappy.
But we know the DACA folks lost. Democrats lost.
The Democrats lost their leverage, at least in this next window, until the next shutdown.
Schumer's sellout. The perception is he got rolled. And the left is not happy.
I'm just not totally sure what Democrats got here.
Why did they shut down the government in the first place?
There is some anger on the left.
Yeah.
That the Democrats, you know, in their mind, may have caved on this shutdown.
We are outraged that millions of people went out into the streets in support of Dreamers and Senate Democrats chose to vote against Dreamers.
Leader Schumer, what one thing did he get, you know, from Republicans to justify shutting down the government in the first place?
They agreed to Democrats to fund the government through February 8th in exchange for a promise from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell that they would have a debate and a vote on DACA. In other words, for nothing.
People are saying Democrats caved and they surrendered.
A lot of your members say that Leader Schumer caved. Did he?
Do you think Senator Chuck Schumer caved?
Did Senate Democrats cave?
Another Senate aide told NBC News, quote, "We caved. We lost."
If Democrats don't want to fight, then let's find some people who will.
Is it fair to say that the shutdown, the government shutdown, backfired for Democrats?
In Washington, there are winners and losers. Democrats wanted a DACA fix. They didn't get it. The Democrats lost.
It's Wednesday, January 24th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I think you could take this as a comparison to Reagan. I cannot remember a time in my life, except perhaps during the Reagan administration, that I heard reporting like that. I can't think of a time. It didn't happen under George H.W. Bush. It didn't obviously happen under Clinton. It didn't happen under George W. Bush. Certainly didn't happen over Obama. I've never heard reporting like that. I've never heard they caved. They blinked. They didn't get anything. They tried. They failed. It, in my lifetime, except for Reagan, it has always been they won and the Republicans caved and it, right? I don't think I've ever heard it any other way. This is why America voted for Donald Trump. The people who voted for Donald Trump, I think, I could be wrong, I think this is more satisfying in some ways than even Gorsuch. Not more important, more satisfying. Gorsuch was nice. This has a visceral kind of feel to it.
Yes, I think that's true. I don't know that that's a good instinct.
No, I'm not saying it is. I'm saying it's reality.
Right, I mean, because then what did they get? I mean, I think it's great to hear, right, that your side won for once. I mean, that's great. Yeah. But I mean, the other side of it is, it's what, 3 weeks? I mean, in 3 weeks, we're going to be right. It's, yes, they won a very short-term battle that really, I mean, the fact that they didn't have to give up DACA is important if what you'd want at the end isn't DACA. The problem is that if
it's going to be
like
DACA.
Both sides are saying they want DACA. So the fact that they delayed DACA for a few weeks and delayed this battle for a few weeks is positive because obviously the government should function and should and everything. I mean, you know, I mean, we all understand that. I would like the government to be cut to the levels of a shutdown, but so not necessarily in that way.
So, but hear me out. Tell me the time when the Democrats have, you know, oh my gosh, these poor little children who are starving and don't have eyes, and the evil Republicans just want to take away donated eyes from these children. Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen those ridiculous stories and the media pounce and try to flip absolutely everything upside down? And it works. It works every time.
Yeah. I mean,
this time it didn't.
It seems like the Democrats are legitimately annoyed that they tried for something and could not win.
Yeah.
And the media is playing into that, saying they're taking the side of essentially Elizabeth Warren, right? They're taking the side of Bernie Sanders. They didn't go far enough. They didn't do it enough. They lost. And that's a revealing thing about the media, and also sure a revealing thing about the party and where the power is going to go in the party. Because, I mean, in a way, you could argue that Schumer, who's an insane leftist, is actually playing the role of a normal Democrat here.
Yep.
He's not playing Bernie Sanders. He's playing, hey, we'll give you some money for the wall, and we'll try to get this big left-wing priority done of DACA.
Right. What was it that they said about the Republicans of the Tea Parties, that the radicals had taken over?
Yeah.
The media is cheering for the radicals here.
Exactly.
That is where the Democrats are going to go. If you are a Democrat, if you're a center of the country Democrat and you're not into Marxism and you love the country and everything else, you're about to lose your party. You've lost your party already, but you still had some chance. They're going to exterminate, politically speaking, the people like Chuck Schumer.
And Schumer is not like a moderate.
He's not a moderate.
He's a crazy leftist.
But in this particular case, he was the moderate. It shows you how far left this party is going.
That's probably the biggest thing I take out of this. Because honestly, the win for Republicans here is what?
Let me have a
moment. No. I think this is an important development. And it's something that you should be happy about if you're a Republican, right? Because it takes away, Democrats losing something like this is big. The fact that they're going to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, generally speaking, is a positive development for your electoral future.
Yes.
If you're a Republican.
Yes.
I mean, running against, a socialist, an admitted socialist, it should be nothing but a blessing to Republicans. The other side of this, though, is we have to take it into account and put it in perspective here. What you're talking about is they've pushed a big-time left-wing priority down the road for 3 weeks. That is that's the win here.
Yes,
policy-wise.
I know.
Again,
however,
there's the visceral feeling.
Right, but there
feelings
is
are
also
feelings.
Hang on just a second. There is also the lesson that has been learned now by the left. We may have overplayed our hand on this one. It didn't work this time.
Right.
It always works. I literally cannot think of a time that hasn't worked. Can you? Have you ever heard reporting like that? The Democrats caved. What did they get? They got nothing. That's always us. Replace the word Democrat with Republican, and that's the only story I've ever heard from the press.
Right.
This time, they're saying it didn't work. Well, they had every reason for it to work. They had millions of people out on the streets over the weekend. That's all they covered. They had the dreamers and the poor little children and the immigrants. They had that storyline. They had all of the tools that always work. And yet they saw something in their research that said fold.
Yeah.
That's important.
Well, two parts of this. In polling, when you look at polling, what showed up there was that people, generally speaking, by the way, DACA is a relatively popular proposal. And it's because people look at it and they say, kids came across the border. It's not their fault. They should be able to stay. Generally speaking, when you get it to the nuanced level of it, it's not very popular. But on the top line, people like that proposal generally.
And
so
failed.
That's why Democrats believe this would work.
Uh-huh.
What they found is when they asked the American people, hey, DACA or your government is shut down, they wanted the government open more than they wanted DACA.
And I don't think
see that coming.
I don't think that they wanted the government open. I think they were like, stop it.
Yeah, yeah. They wanted over with. Shut up. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. I mean, you know, it's something you can look at and say it's certainly not a bad thing for Republicans.
Let me say it this way. It changes strategies. It possibly mm-hmm. may be the beginning of overplaying your hand and counting on the media and expecting that the media can pull everything off. It's a different world.
And I'll say this too. Part of this we should actually give credit to the all-time enemy of the mainstream media, because many of them did report this as a Democrat shutdown, as a Democrat caused shutdown.
Yes.
Many of them did report it as them, as we just played a large montage from the Washington Free Beacon of them saying that they lost afterwards. I mean, this one was so obviously a Democrat shutdown, it was hard to ignore. So I'm not going to give so too much credit. But the fact that
they tried,
some of them did. Yeah. But the fact that the Democrats actually heard it from their own people
is astounding.
It's astounding. And I think a factor here. I mean, it wasn't just right wingers saying the Democrats shut down the government. The mainstream media said it a lot as well. And I think that influences them to give up, which is positive.
I think it is also a gauge of the temperature of the center of the country. The average person wants this nonsense to stop. We have a ton of work to do to hit our goals in 2018, and you need a good night's sleep. The Casper mattress has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and comfort so you feel perfectly balanced. And thanks to the breathable material, you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattresses are built to last for years. Casper. Tanya and I have a Casper mattress, and we absolutely... we just love it. We just love it. Try your Casper mattress for 100 nights, risk-free. If you don't love it, you send it back. I will tell you, the first time I did a commercial for the new Casper Wave, I told you, I had it for about 3 days, and I said, I'm not sure about this mattress. I like the old one. I'm not sure I like this one. I love this mattress. It takes a while for you on any mattress. That's why, you know, going to the store and laying down on a mattress, it doesn't work. Because you don't know what it's going to feel like after a few days, after a week, after a month. That's why Casper wants you to try it in your own home for 100 nights, free shipping and free returns. You don't have to worry about boxing it up. They come and take it from you and refund every single penny if you don't love it. But you're going to. Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Save $50 off the purchase of your select mattress. That's Casper.com. Save $50 of select mattresses now. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I'm not sure it's for the same reason, but there is something good that is starting to brew in Alabama. Alabama with some judges are in open rebellion against the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, and they don't want to issue marriage license. So what are you going to do? What's going to happen? How do you solve this? One senator, a Republican state senator, Greg Albritton, I think it's his name, is proposing to eliminate the license altogether. He says that way you don't have to endorse or not endorse. Just why do we have a license? Yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
The only thing the only problem I have with that is approximately 80% of the value of my marriage comes from the state.
Yeah, I do too.
The fact that they
yours
approve,
is only 80%. Wow, you have a bad marriage.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. I mean, the fact that the government says it's okay for me to be married, and says, you know what, I recognize you guys have the same last name is so vitally important to me.
It really is.
And my life.
Really is.
That
it makes it an honor to go ahead and pay, you know, the extra taxes.
Oh,
and
the fee for the license. I love all of that.
There
was nothing more romantic
than
signing that government document acknowledging that we were married. Yeah. I mean, that is what you look back on. You don't look back at the pictures of the wedding or the honeymoon.
No.
You look back and say, wow, remember that time we went to that sterile office?
Can I tell you something? You know, the government really encouraged me with the income tax. You know, I wasn't thinking about getting married. I didn't really love her that much.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I saw, Aiden, if we legally get married, then we might get a break on our income tax. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, okay, all right, that's a reason.
Every classic love story ends with a deduction in taxes.
Exactly.
That's
right.
How it works.
Greg, that is the right idea. Yes, we survived. Abraham Lincoln didn't have one.
George Washington.
George Washington didn't have one. Mm-hmm. If you want to get married, go get married. Go get married. Why is the state involved in this at all?
Well, there's, of course, an answer to that, which is to make sure black people don't marry white people,
which is why marriage licenses
started in the with progressives.
And defectives.
And defectives.
That's why we have to get a blood test, because the idea was make sure that no defectives marry each other.
It's one of those really weird things that has turned into, like, people take the marriage license as, like, a gift from the government. Like, that's not what it is.
You frame that. Some people frame their marriage license. Why?
Why? What does that have to do with anything? I mean, it just shows how dependent on government we become. When the father of our country was like, I don't need that. Why would I need that? It wasn't even a considered thing with George freaking Washington. And then hundreds of years later, like, even hardcore conservatives are like, I absolutely must have that piece of paper because that will make sure that we're really, really, really in love. That means that will make it government recognized. What an honor.
it's such a weird, crazy.
It is a weird
especially
thing.
Since it really did come from Reconstruction of, let's make sure none of our wives marry one of them black people.
Yeah, there's charts. You can go back in history and look at the charts where they say, like, it's okay to grant a license if a person is only one-third black. You know, like, so there was an actual chart.
Can I tell you something? We had the author on from, what was it, Yale, that talked about the Nuremberg race laws that came from us. They ended up in Nazi Germany being one of the foundational principles of the Nazi party and how to regulate and separate race. They looked at us and they said, well, they've gone really far. But if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane when you actually know the history of the marriage license, why it was put in place, why you have that blood test. Greg, Alabama, you're on the right track. Get the government out of it, and we don't have to have this discussion anymore.
Your relationship with Greg is escalating quickly here.
I don't know. I mean, Greg did say this. He said, instead of a marriage license, the couple would just submit a form to a probate judge swearing that they're willing to get married, not already married, not related, and of legal age.
I mean, part of that is, you know, considering the fact that the government is involved, you can't break other laws. One of the big arguments against what we're saying here, when you're getting the government out of marriage completely, and even, you know, you'll hear even libertarians sometimes say it,
well, it would be too much of a pain because we already have these laws that are based on that and we'd have to unravel those.
How is a libertarian making that argument? Every part of your philosophy has that qualifier to it. Every part
unravel
of
what?
Right. Like, well, you know, there's tax laws associated with it. There's property laws, all those things, though. But they, if it's the right thing to do, you unravel those laws.
Right.
It was probably really difficult.
I mean, the coming from the people who are like, I'd legalize heroin tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
Well, there's some consequences to that.
Right, and it was probably an complicated process to unravel the associated laws with slavery, too, but it was a good idea, so we did it.
I don't know.
I'm not putting them on the same platform, but it's a proof of concept here.
Yes,
when something is right to do,
you
go ahead. And
that one was probably a little more tough.
Yeah, I'm sure. It was a big deal at the time.
A little more tough there.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing because I think people love the culture debate so much around it, at least until recently, because recently the polling has turned around enough on it that it's not really as, you know, obviously even President Trump is not fighting the gay marriage issue anymore. There's not really another side to it seemingly anymore, except for it locally. So, you know, I guess people just aren't, they don't have that culture debate to fall back on. But I think a lot of it is that.
I just wish, you know, I wish we would have argued instead of gay marriage is wrong. I just wish we would have argued the actual thing. Do what you want to do. I will do what I want to do. The government has no place in my bedroom, in my home, between me and my wife, between me and my spouse, period.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Yesterday on television, we did a couple of things. One, I started to lay out a concern that I have of the corruption of the Justice Department and the FBI. And I want to take that and separate that from Donald Trump and from Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama even. We must focus on what has happened to the Justice Department. Are we getting the truth about Russia? Are we able to even have an independent view? They're losing. They lost the IRS records of Lois Lerner. They couldn't retrieve the Hillary Clinton emails. I mean, the NSA has more servers and more computational power and memory than all of the companies in Silicon Valley combined. That's pretty intense. How come we can't put it to use? Now they've lost the text messages from the FBI agents that were appear to be colluding against Donald Trump. That is treason if it would be true. We don't know if it's true because the FBI lost a select number of text messages between these two, between the time of the Donald Trump transition and the hiring of Mueller for special independent counselor. Wow, that's really, really tough to lose just that window of just those texts. But can we call the phone company? Because I think they can produce it, can't they? I mean, isn't that what law enforcement always does? Can we get that through the phone company? Can we not call the NSA and say, hey, we need this data. Go look for this particular data. They say they store everything. They just don't look at it. Well, then good. Look for this data.
And that seems to be what the president is hinting at today with his tweet about blaming Samsung for the missing messages. He seems to be like, well, let's find a way to get them. He's trying to get somebody from some other source to pick up these messages.
He's a president of the United States. Order the NSA to go back in and look for him. That's what you do.
But can you? I mean, it's not supposed
to. You could go to a FISA court
and get the warrant.
You could get the warrant. I mean,
could certainly influence that process, right?
Yeah, this is important documentation for a very important investigation. If there's not a reason for FISA, if there's not a court, you don't even have to have the secret court. If there isn't a court that the president, this is possibly about treason, and it could be about obstruction of justice on the other side. Those are both pretty big deals. If somebody can't go to the court and say, look, we might have treason in the FBI. We might have a president who is obstructing justice. We need to know. We need a warrant to go find these things. If a judge won't issue that, then what good is all of that money that we have spent on the server farms that none of us want? Well, Facebook isn't losing it. We have more servers than Google and Facebook combined, and plus everybody else in Silicon Valley.
Right. I mean, they, of course, claim they don't have all that data.
Yeah, of course
right?
they do.
They only have the metadata. They could see that a text was sent, but they can't see what was in it. That's what they say.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know that you believe that.
I don't believe that at all.
But
here's the other thing, and we have to be really, really careful on this. Ron Johnson, who was a Tea Party candidate, I believe.
Yeah,
wasn't
sure.
He?
Mm-hmm. Senator in Wisconsin.
So Ron Johnson said something yesterday that is, if true, really, really concerning. if it is, if he doesn't know, I have a warning from history. But first, listen to what he said.
And that secret society, we have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. There's so much smoke here. There's so much suspicion.
Let's stop there. A secret society, secret meetings off-site of the Justice Department.
Correct.
And you have an informant saying that?
Yes.
Is there anything more about that?
No, we have to dig into it. This is not a distraction. Again, this is bias, potentially corruption at the highest levels of the FBI that is now investigating.
Okay, so the way he said yes makes me nervous. I didn't feel the full conviction of his yes. Wait, you have an informant? Yes. I would like you to have more of a conviction on that. We also don't know who that informant was. Now, that is a serious charge, and it needs to be examined. But warning, Republicans and everyone else, don't make the mistake of going off half-cocked. Don't talk about this until you have something substantial. And if I may, let's just remember how this worked last time. Somebody said there was a secret society in our government. In case you don't remember what I'm talking about, in West Virginia, a senator stood up and said, there are 200, I have the names of 205 card-carrying members of the Communist Party who work now at the U.S. Department of State. Here's what happened.
I think we've got a much more serious situation now in communist infiltration of the CIA. Disturbs me beyond words.
Well, we haven't. The members of the committee have not been advised, and I do think that...
Oh, yes, they have. Oh, yes, they have.
Have we, the names and of the people...
I've discussed this matter with the members of the committee. I've also discussed with the members of the committee the question of communist infiltration of atomic and hydrogen bomb plants. I felt that was, I think, even more important than this infiltration at...
Let me finish and view this one point. May I have from the files all the memos and...
Senator, may we not drop this? We know he belongs to the Lawyers Guild. And Mr. Cole nods his head at me. I did you, I think, no personal injury, Mr. Cole.
No, sir.
I meant to do you no personal injury. And if I did, I beg your pardon. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts you, Mr. Welch.
May I say,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to finish this.
Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir.
I'd like to finish this.
So that was McCarthy. If you've ever read the book Blackmailed by History, it lays out a pretty good case. McCarthy was right. He was the wrong messenger. He was, but he was also set up. He was just not the right guy to deliver. Read the book. It is
Blacklisted by History.
Blacklisted by History. It is really well documented. And it's one of those things that, you know, I always thought McCarthy was, you know, lying or a bad guy. No, that's different than the Committee on Un-American Hearings. What he was talking about was the government infiltration of communists. And we know this to be true now. We know this to be true. We know this. I'm trying to remember who was the guy that... for so long was accused to be a communist and the media stood up for him. And then in the 80s, it was exposed. In the 90s, it was exposed because we got all the intelligence from the Verona Project in Russia. And it was exposed that, yes, absolutely he was.
Oops.
Yeah. and the media reported on it, but then they whitewash it and they still go back to, well, he wasn't really a communist. Yeah, he was, according to the Verona Project. According to the Russians, yes, he was. So we know that there was that government infiltration. There may be, and there may not be. I hope to God there's not. But there may be a group of people who think that they're above the law in the FBI, in the Justice Department, that want to make sure that they have, you know, an insurance program because they don't think that Donald Trump is good. They don't agree with him. They think he's dangerous. And so they will take him out. Now, that's what the initial emails or the initial tweets allude to, but there's no evidence of that, but it alludes to that. Plus, you now have Ron Johnson saying there's somebody else that is offering testimony that they were having, somebody was having secret meetings. Well, this is good if there's something there. I believe there are people in the government, and I don't think it's a star chamber or anything else. I just think there are people who are, look at the State Department. They think they know better, and they're just going to do it their way. That's not the way our system is supposed to work. We need to get to the root of it and the truth of it without hysteria, name-calling, or wild accusations that will, in the end, hurt the entire investigation.
Yeah, and this is something you've talked about for a long time, going back at least to George W. Bush, but also even during Obama. There's the idea that there's these people that are in the government that don't leave.
George Bush told me this.
Yeah, you met with him in the Oval Office.
He said it doesn't matter. I was concerned on the day I met was the day that Barack Obama said he just fly fighter jets over into Pakistan and he'd bomb them without their permission. You can't do that to an ally. And I was in the Oval Office on that day, and I said to George Bush, this is concerning. He said, don't worry. It doesn't matter who sits in this chair, because they'll get here and they will be advised and they will see the options, and the president's hands are pretty much tied. What? Now, he thought that that was comforting. It was not comforting. That kind of stuff we have to know about. Are there people now in the Justice Department? And, you know, the press isn't even looking at this. Where is your credibility? Where is your curiosity? You don't think the FBI could go wrong? You don't think the Justice Department? Where is all of your liberal tendencies to worry about a giant state?
Oh, these organizations are filled with these things called people. Human beings who tend to, some of them are really good and some of them aren't. And the same thing that happens with the police, with everything, there are at times people who don't do the right thing, and you need to find out who they are and you need to correct the situation.
And just like the police, the vast majority are good. Mm. A few bad apples and it's all destroyed. Tonight at 5 o'clock, we are going to be delving into a couple of things. One, the Russia investigation, but this one is on Uranium One. We've done a chalkboard series. It's a 4-day series. Today, day number 3. Today is really interesting. Today gets into the Clinton coincidence, the money that was exchanged from Russia, and in particular, Bill Clinton, and the amazing coincidences that happened all around that time. Who was giving that money to the Clinton Foundation? You need to watch this and share it with some friends tonight, only at 5 p.m. on theblaze.com/TV. Subscribe and share. Researchers recently found 2 serious security flaws in chips that are used in nearly every PC, server, smartphone, tablet, everything really produced in the last decade. And hackers can potentially make use of these flaws to steal data stored in memory, including your passwords and your files. Computers connected to the cloud service are especially at risk. Who's not connected to the cloud now? Luckily, operating system providers have already released security patches But there are other experts that are saying that isn't good enough. You're going to have to replace all those chips. Anything that says Intel on it is a possible problem. 1 in 4 people have experienced identity theft, and you probably, I mean, I think you're almost guaranteed in your lifetime to have your identity stolen in one shape or another, and it can get really bad. Your identity can be sold on the dark web, or you can have things like somebody just getting an online payday loan, or somebody comes into the country and uses your son or daughter's name because they're not using it until they grow up. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. And if you have a problem, somebody here in the U.S. is going to restore it with you and for you. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft, monitor all transactions, but LifeLock is the best. Join now, get 10% off with the promo code BECK. 10% off now, promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or go to LifeLock.com and use the promo code BECK. LifeLock.com, save 10%, promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Excited to have Scott Hamilton on. Scott Hamilton, he is an Olympic gold medalist. He is the guy who does all of the Olympics for figure skating. He is also the author of Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. He's also a cancer survivor, which is really important. He has an amazing story on his life and how he became a figure skater. More importantly, when you read his book, it takes all of us to task. It takes all of us. I mean, I'll give you some of these after the top of the hour break when he joins us. But I've got some bad news for you, he writes. You were not born a winner. You may have been told somewhere along the way that you were. Maybe your parents said you were number one no matter what you did. But winning is about accessing all of your innate human potential. You cannot be born a winner, but you can become one. Check your entitlement at the door. Stop shielding people in this way from losing. This should be a very empowering hour and very interesting. I also want to talk to him about Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan. I mean, Tanya Harding is going through this little, you know, oh, look, it's Tanya Harding. How about Nancy Kerrigan? We'll talk to Scott Hamilton, Olympic gold medalist and author of Finished First, when we come back.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Scott Hamilton is probably the most recognized male figure skating star in the world. He is a member of the U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame, World Figure Skating Hall of Fame. He's the guy that you watch every Olympics that gets very, very excited. He is the author of the book Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. And I don't know of a guest that I have had on that I have such a wide range of topics that I want to talk about.
I guess I've been around too long, right? Yeah.
No, you've led a fascinating life, and I
thank you.
If we have time, I want to get into how you got into skating, because your childhood is fascinating. But I want to start with the meat. It is not a book that I expected. I wasn't expecting the hard punches, in a nice way. But you are taking on our trophy culture. You are taking on our culture of, hey, there's no losers.
Yeah.
We're all winners.
Yeah, no, we're not yet. You know, we're all, you know, it's just, it's not a forced march. You know, like, life isn't this, you know, harsh, horrible thing. And it's also not like this, you know, cozy thing where we can just lay on a hill and just breathe in and breathe out until the last one we take, right? Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, having a purpose and an opportunity to really live our lives fully. And I'm seeing, you know, sort of this this whole generation kind of sort of sleeping through it somewhat. And, you know, this was really meant to be just a wake-up call and a little bit of a, I'm here to cheer you on. Here is an argument for and a guide to being better than you've ever been. and winning, winning in life, winning in your purpose, winning in your, you know, taking your talents to, you know, places unknown, and to really live your lives fully and joyfully. And it's not an easy road, but it's also one that I've lived and I've seen it on, you know, from many different angles. And so we just, when coming up with this book, it was just sort of like, my goodness, we sat in a room, there's a bunch of us, and we're just sort of like, and what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And the excitement was just unbelievable to kind of like, we got to narrow this down. We got to keep the message really on point, and we've got to make sure that we hit all the different angles of what this journey is and what it means. And it really is an invitation to anyone that wants to make their, you know, really live their lives with purpose and, you know, who they are legitimately.
So I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I've made more mistakes than I've
who hasn't made a mountain of mistakes.
I know. I'm positive I wouldn't be the man that I am without the mistakes without the failures in my life. I get stronger. We're living in a society now that wants to stop all failure, all pain. Could you be who you are without your childhood illness, without your cancer, without your mother's cancer? I mean, you wouldn't be the same guy.
The greatest single ingredient in success and in living a joyful life is failure. And it's all
about... Say that again.
The greatest single ingredient in a joyful and productive life is failure. You have to have it. You have to have failure. You've got to look at it differently than it being this horrible, nasty, evil villain that's, you know... And it is something to be processed and understood, not to be feared. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, Hey, my first nationals, and this was like after not making it to nationals. I mean, all these years, all this coming up and failing figure tests and failing, you know, and doing all this. You know, my first nationals, I skated in front of 17,500 people. I grew up in a very small town. I even trained in a smaller one. That was more people than I'd ever seen in my life, but they were all in one place. And I fell 5 times and came in dead last. And you know, I could have just gone, okay, well, you know, this isn't for me. I'm never going to put myself through that before. But I kind of like cried for a week, and then I realized I made a better stuff than this. I'm going to go back, and the next year I'm going to be better. Well, I wasn't. Well, then I'm going to go back next time, and I'm going to be a little bit better. And I was maybe a little bit. But it wasn't, you know, it's just this roller coaster of failure after failure after failure. And what I did was I didn't allow them to so much defeat me or talk me out of anything. I just really wanted to learn from them. And I was like, okay, why did I do that? Why did I fail on the biggest stage that I could skate on? I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready yet. So it wasn't that I was going to look at that failure as an end all be all. Most of the guys that were winning at that level, that was their destination. They were done after that. You know, I felt like there was, you know, skating saved my life. Skating gave me an identity and a purpose. And so I owed it to skating to kind of see it through. And so you know, this whole journey of processing failure, like it's the chapter 8 is ditch fear and embrace failure. And it's a whole different look at failure. Looking back on the 36 years that I was really active in skating, I calculate that I fell 41,600 times.
Holy cow, you're Jerry Lewis. Falls.
Nice lady. Hey. You get up 41,600 times and things don't quite take on the same identity when you get knocked down in life, mm-hmm. whether it be cancer or mm-hmm. other life-threatening illness or failed relationships or whatever they are. You learn how to be more resilient. And then in that resilient, there's hope for a better day. And so in this, we just really wanted to highlight failure as like, I'll speak to corporations and everyone in that audience is extremely successful. How many people in this room have failed? 100% of them will raise their hand, and yet they're high levels of success.
Yes.
So as a culture, we cannot vilify failure. We have to embrace it.
This was something that I kind of put on the cut list because I have very little time with you, but I think it might relate to this and I'd be interested in here. I was curious, and you don't have to answer this part because I don't want to waste time, but I was curious on how the Olympics have changed since the Cold War. But in that is the idea that during the Cold War and now with China,
these children are taken from their parents, and they are all the time there. This is what they live for. And yet we're not only competitive, we win. Why?
It's to celebrate excellence. It's to celebrate. No.
I mean, why do people that are choosing to do it and are not taken from their parents, not starting at four and then drilled into it, how can we even be competitive? And how is it that we actually are more than competitive? We win against that kind of training.
I think you do things for the right reasons, and you do things, if you do things because you want to, it takes on a much greater identity than if you're doing things because you have to. You know what I mean? If it's an opportunity, if it's this brass ring that you're working towards, that's one thing. But if it's a forced march, it takes on a different identity. And both can be extremely successful. You know, if you're forced to do something every day and somebody's cracking the whip, you're probably going to advance. You're probably going to be pretty good. You're probably going to be fine. But the one that sees this is this really wonderful opportunity. Evgeny Plushenko said something, a great Russian skater, you know, medaled at three Olympics, you know, anchored the Russian team in the last Olympics. This incredible guy with tons of longevity. He sat down with me one time and I go, "What makes you tick?" And he just said, "Americans wake up every morning with a belly of warm milk. I'm hungry."
Oh, that's great.
Because his life was tragic. I mean, it was just a nightmare. His early life, his formative years. And it chiseled him. Like, it was amazing just to see this guy. And it was all ambition. It was all about going after this thing. And he just felt like he'd always beat Americans because they were entitled and spoiled. And then an American beat him straight up. And he was like, I can't process this. This doesn't make any sense to me. But it goes back to, you know, we have an opportunity. We have this, you know, we all have unique abilities. We all have our own set of qualities, and it's leveraging those for living our lives joyfully.
So speak to the parents that, and even to the helicopter parents in government that want to swoop in and make all problems just go away for banks or whatever. Speak to the parents who that are thinking that they're are trying to do the right thing by saying, "You're special, you're great, that was a great performance."
We love our children unconditionally. I had a moment the other day, and it's my son, my youngest, loves hockey. He's just so in love with hockey. He loves the Predators. He loves going to the games. He watches NHL Channel every morning at breakfast. You know, he's consumed with hockey, but he hasn't been able to go to the rink every single day like a lot of his friends who are on that travel team thing. And, you know, he's still learning. And when he loses, it kills him. It destroys him that he knows he wants to be better, and he knows it. And it's just, how do we get him there more? And I just said that. He goes, "It's on me, buddy. So much of it's on me that I know you have the passion. I know you, but we need to give you more time. We need to develop you more." And I tell him all the time, I go, "Max, what's the greatest strength?" And he goes, "A lack of weakness." And I go, "It's true. If we can chip away at our weaknesses, we're going to be stronger, more resilient than we ever thought we could." But it's the process of doing all these things that we need to spend time doing it. We need to have those times of practice. And I told him, I go, "Today's failure, Max, isn't on you. It's on me, because I need to get you to the rink more often, and I need to give you better instruction."
Talking to Scott Hamilton, author, "Finish First, Winning Changes Everything." More in a moment.
Our sponsor this half hour is ZipRecruiter. It's a fresh new year. If you are a business person and you want to hire, you need to hire somebody, you got to find the right person. That person you hire changes everything. It could mean the difference between failure and success. ZipRecruiter has transformed the way that you go about finding the right person. ZipRecruiter first posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with a single click. That saves you time. However, what they do that you don't see the others doing, they once you post it, everybody else just waits for somebody to see it. ZipRecruiter actively goes out and looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. This is why ZipRecruiter, finds the right candidate faster. In fact, 80% of employers who post with ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate in the site for the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why it's been used by businesses of my size to, you know, Fortune 100 companies. ZipRecruiter, you can try it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/back. Again, try it for free, ZipRecruiter.com/back.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We're with Scott Hamilton, U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame, World Figure Skating Hall of Fame member, and a cancer survivor, has a fascinating story. Can you quickly give us the reason why you skate? I love this. It was kind of like, give your parents a break.
A morning off. Exactly. Yeah. So what happened was, I was in and out of hospitals for 4 years with an undiagnosed illness, and it was stunning my growth and development. So I was really a very...
Still don't know what it was.
We kind of know. We know what it is now, because they didn't have the technology back then to find it. So this brain tumor that was diagnosed in 2004, I was born with it. But for whatever reason, those years that I skated, it stopped doing its mischief. It just didn't do its mischief. And then I retired from skating. And then months later, all of a sudden, I have a brain tumor.
What's your perspective on that?
Well, they didn't have the technology to find it back then. It wasn't on anybody's radar. They just thought I had some sort of gastrointestinal disease. So they were looking in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. So to give my parents a morning off after this 4 years, the doctor at the Boston Children's Hospital said, go home, live a normal life. You know, and our doctor at home said, my parents, you're burnt out. You need a morning just to recharge your batteries and just do something for you. And so they sent me to this brand new skating rink at Bowling Green State University, where they had 150 kids every morning for 4 hours in classes. And it was awesome, because I was with well kids for really the first time doing something like that. And after a few weeks, I realized that I was skating as well as the well kids. And then after a few more weeks, I realized I was skating as well as the best athletes in my grade. And let me tell you, self-esteem.
Because you were small,
I was undersized. I had a tube coming out of my nose where I was fed these supplements because I wouldn't drink them. So the compromise was, they were going to put a tube through my nose down my esophagus, and they're going to feed it to me.
You chose that instead
because, you know, now it's flavor of the month is grape or bubblegum.
Yeah.
Flavor of the month then was chalk. That was it. So, I was different. I knew I was different. I was smaller. I was underdeveloped. And every muscle I ever developed was done on the ice. So I didn't have any extra baggage. I didn't have anything I didn't need. And my body was really more fine-tuned to skate than it was to do anything else.
Again, taking something that people would think is a tragedy and turning it into
it's been a recurring theme.
Yeah,
it's been a recurring theme, and it's given me why people go, why are you so disgustingly optimistic? And it's like, well, you see, all these really, really kind of tragically bad things happen to me, and then like out of that, something kind of great happened. So I was, I was an unwanted child, and I was adopted by great parents. Then I got sick, and I found skating, and I got well, and I lost a whole bunch of times, and it was awful, and it was terrible, and it was horrible. And then I found a way to kind of work that out and over time become more successful. And, you know, then I lost my mom, and that was devastating. And then I decided I wanted to be the person that she would be proud of. And so I just cleaned up my act, and I started getting to work, and I made a mountain of mistakes. But over time, I was able to figure out a way that, if I do this thing correctly, and if I do it as well as I can do it, I'm going to put myself in a position for good things to happen. And that's kind of where the whole book came out of, is that idea that so many of us, have these things that we want to do, but we fear failure, or we feel critics, or we fear all these things around us. And we know that our lives would be better if we just pursued these wonderful things that come from showing up every day and doing the work and making easy choices. I celebrate this one thing, and it's really a horrible thing, and please don't judge me on this, okay? But I talk about, and it was about the choice thing. There was a skater back in my day who was 100,000 times more talented than me. He did things that I never saw before, and easily without even, he was so naturally gifted. And one morning, there was this kind of rumor mill going around, and I heard that he fell in love with smoking pot. And it was the greatest morning of my life, because I realized he'll never beat me. He'll never beat me, because it was an easy decision. that was made that put him in a deficit position. So now it's like, he'll never beat me. I'm so excited.
Does he know that story?
No. It was just part of a broader set of issues where he's no longer with us. But
oh my gosh,
it was just.
You think he was the greatest skater that you
most naturally talented and gifted skater I'd ever seen in my life, and I really liked him as a person. When I turned pro and I started becoming a producer and things, he would be the first guy I want to hire because he was so amazing to watch. He was just like you just watch him and you'd relax and you'd be captivated, but. In the whole idea of competition and the whole idea of trying to find your place and the whole idea of going for those smaller victories that kind of build up to these bigger victories, then when those bigger victories happen, the world opens up to us and other things are available to us that we never imagined. I look back on that and I go, he chose his path and it was the path that he needed to choose, but it wasn't the path that I would have chosen. Yeah. It wasn't the path that I wanted to be on. So I don't judge him at all. Sure. But it opened the door for me to be more successful.
Talking to Scott Hamilton, he's the author of the book Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. It is a really inspiring book, but it's also a little bit of a woodshed book. Time to take yourself to the woodshed and say, you know, stop it. You can make it.
Well, and it's also that for some people, but for others, it's like, oh. This is the way I can.
Yeah.
This is a path. And these are my pain points and these are my fears. And now we're answering those. It's like, yes, I'm ready to go.
I only have 2 minutes left.
I'm sorry.
I have to, no. I have to ask you about Tanya Harding and the movie.
Can I go anywhere?
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to do that.
It's all right. You know, I
I mean, I feel bad for Nancy Kerrigan, first of all.
Well, we and Nancy and I, you know, are good friends and I see her all the time. And you know, she's just a great mom. And, you know,
she was so classy.
She was beautiful, but she was also like, you know how Mark McCormack from IMG said, if you want to know something about somebody, take them out in the golf course. Mm-hmm. She was the most aggressive in your face golfer I ever played with in my life. Really? And I loved it. She was so fun, always fun to be around, always fun to hang out with, always, you know, kind of, she just had with a force of, you know, just this force of nature, this amazing, competitor and everything else. And the way that all transpired in 94 was massively unfair. It put her into a position that none of us should ever have to be in. And, you know, I'm all about redemption. I'm all about forgiveness. But, you know, a big part of redemption is to come forward mm-hmm. and to admit that mm-hmm. there are things that, you know, I'm not 100% sure that Tanya's ever really done that. You mm-hmm. know, she's kind of had
She's not coming out. This is her moment in the spotlight, and she's not really looking any better.
Well, and again, I don't want to judge people. I was around Tanya a lot. The lady that saved my skating life and career that, you know, my parents went broke keeping me in skating. And she sponsored Tanya as well, but Tanya didn't understand the gift. Mm. Tanya bit every hand that ever fed her.
The name of the name of the book is Finished First. The author is Scott Hamilton. It has been great to have you.
Well, it's great to be here. You win for the coolest studio and the coolest space of all time. This is awesome.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So NBC has been given rare access inside of North Korea. So we've got American news cameras finally able to show the truth about what life is like inside this hermit kingdom. And wow. Look what they've exposed so far.
This is the Bunny Slope at a very modern ski resort here in North Korea. We have been treated with respect here. So many impressions. One is that how colorful a city it is. You can see the buildings, so many hues of green and yellow and red. One of the early impressions I've had here is how hardy the North Korean people are.
Wow. Wow.
Wow.
You got a modern ski resort, you have colorful buildings, and the people are hardy. Now, I'm hoping that NBC is going to go further, and they're only saying those things because they have a gun to their head? I mean, where's the journalism there? You know what? I am the only person from the West that's been allowed to stand in front of these buildings. You might want to mention that you're only allowed to go where your guards will allow you to go. Anything that might point out the oppressive nature of the state instead of regurgitating all of the state's narrative. NBC, I don't even know what you're doing. I mean, why go and report on anything at all? If you can't tell the truth, why go there? At what point does your work become propaganda for a ruthless dictator? Now, I'm counting on NBC having some sort of a follow-up, but then why would you go in the first place? Because you'll never go again. I don't understand what you were trying to, what you've traded for this rare access. Because you've traded your credibility. What did you get out of it? Doing a stand-up in North Korea, it had to sound cool. You know, especially when the State Department just last week said, do not go to North Korea. And if you do, make sure your will and your estate is in order. So I guess maybe it would be cool. But would we have done this before? I mean, if NBC was terrified of offending Kim Jong-un by doing their actual job, why didn't they, you know, just stand Lester Holt in front of a green screen with some cool looking B-roll and say, yep, this is the ski slope that was probably built by slaves. Why not? In 1944, there was a guy named Kurt Garon. He was probably one of the most famous movie actors of Germany before the war. He was Jewish. And his story is long and intense, and we've covered it on his story on the Blaze TV. And if you get a chance, watch it, download, watch it on demand now. The story of Kurt Garon, it is truly remarkable. But here's a guy who, in the end, compromised and was commissioned by the Nazis to make a film taking a concentration camp and turning that concentration camp into a Jewish paradise. And the movie is out, and you should watch it. You can watch it on YouTube, and it's terrifying when you know the truth. The movie is called The Fuhrer Gives a City to the Jews, and it showed the Jews laughing and playing and enjoying life. But when the cameras weren't rolling, they were all being tortured. They were murdered. In fact, everybody in that film was dead within a month in the ovens of Auschwitz and the gas chambers of Auschwitz. Every single person. You don't go to the town of Auschwitz and say, you know, look at this beautiful little town. Look how colorful it is. When you know that there are concentration camps down the street. NBC News, you are dangerously close to Garon's movie. Evil exists when good men do nothing. What did you get out of that, that you can show to the world, this is what this regime is like? Showing the colorful buildings and the sturdiness and stockiness of the people. My gosh, they're well built. It's because they're so well fed. Showing their colorful buildings does nothing. Those buildings were built by slaves. Darkness reigns when people, and especially the media, fail to speak up.
I think what you mean to say is democracy dies in darkness.
I think, and, maybe, yeah, yeah, something like that. You should write that down.
Look, if there's a gun pointed to your head, I'll excuse your crappy reporting until you get home. But you're right, there needs to be some sort of follow-up on this.
No, there needs to be a discrediting of this. And I don't see how that's a win for NBC.
Yeah, what's the point of going over there? It's hard to understand, especially because it's kind of put into this context of the Olympics. And we were just talking to Scott Hamilton, who was in, and he, you know, won a gold medal in Sarajevo in 1984 in the middle of the Cold War. you know, that same sort of tension seems to, you know, be at least be discussed when it talks about North and South Korea right now, though they've had some bizarre, you know, coming together on the Olympics. But it's like
really bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But to go over to North Korea and talk about their colorful buildings and their sturdy people is...
Do you remember the Cold War?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, remember it ending in Rocky IV, which was really
okay. That wasn't real, but you know, I remember during the Olympics, and maybe this is foggy memory or revisionism, but I don't think it is. I seem to remember before we would go over, if we would ever go to, you know, Sarajevo, if we'd ever go to some place. That was, you know, ruthless, and we'd ever discuss the Soviet Union or any of those countries, it was always, always, this is a brutal place. We're only allowed to show you the things that we can show you. This is what they tell us. They tell us that these buildings, being so colorful, are, you know, one of the pride and joy of the people, who they also tell us are very stocky. That is the way you can do that. When he says, I was really struck by the hardiness of the people. The hardiness of the people?
I don't know what that is.
What the hell is that? And that sounds like something a propaganda minister would give you to infer that you're full, you're well fed, you're hearty.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you listen to, there are times in the report where he says, Lester Holt says something like, you know, we're going to a very modern ski resort. And this is a place the regime really wanted to make sure that we saw. He says something like that. And it's like, well, okay, he's kind of hinting there, right? Like he understands that this is part of a propaganda mission. And anytime you go on a trip like that, you should expect some of that. And it doesn't mean you don't necessarily take the trip. I mean, you know, we've had some discussions about
Syria
and going to Syria.
We've been asked by the Assad regime how many times to go over and interview Assad. And we have had real discussions on that. We knew that if we go over, when we're there, we'd only be able to see what he wanted us to see. And we'd only be able to say the things that that he would be okay with. And we can push him maybe a little, but it's Assad.
Right.
And we've turned it down because we haven't felt comfortable doing the bidding, even though we think we would have been able to have a perspective and a look at what's happening in Syria that would be different than anybody else on talk radio. We decided against it because of that one show or two shows that would have come from Syria. We didn't want to carry that regime's water at all.
Right. And, you know, you wouldn't do it if you had to, you know, you'd never agree to carry someone's water like that. Obviously the point that the only reason to do it is to go over there and get whatever you can and say, this is what we think is really happening. Here's what we saw. Here's, you know, what they wanted us to see. And you have to be honest about that. And we'll see if NBC can kind of do that on the other side of this trip. But that's an important part of it.
If you come back and you have hidden camera stuff, that shows you stuff, if you have even first person, but there's no way, it's like we talked about with Assad, there's no way we're going to be with them the whole time. You know, if you read anything about Hitler, there would be streets, you know, he would go into towns in Poland or wherever, and it would be just desolation. It'd be horrible. But the street he was on had flowers and cheers and flags and everything else. Well, that's what you're going to see when you go over there, because they are in total control. So do you do it? And if so, why? What do you get in return? What does humanity get from making North Korea look like, oh, well, it's not so bad. I mean, it's got a ski resort and look at the buildings are pretty colorful. It's like Miami.
The sad thing that I suspect is what humanity is going to get out of it is access for NBC during the Olympics. They're going to get some, and that's not a worthwhile cause to do such a thing. I mean, we saw that with, you know, Michael Moore did this in his movie with Cuba, where he glorified them and tried to make his points that way. That's not a trade you want to make. You know?
Venezuela.
Yeah.
Look at how many people in Hollywood went and did propaganda for Hugo Chavez. And look, if you could find it in the mainstream media or from anybody in Hollywood, look at the misery that that has caused. I'll tell you about Car Shield. I have a farm, and so we've got a couple of trucks, and I love them. I mean, I've called them beaters in the past, but they're really not. They've really taken care of them. They're just older, and they don't have a warranty anymore. But they're both diesel, and so they're going to run forever, and we want to drive them until the doors fall off. The problem is, you know, driving your grandfather's truck until the doors fell off, you could always fix it, and it was simple. You could even fix it yourself. Not anymore. I mean, a sensor goes wrong on that car, and it's going to cost $1,000. You got to have some sort of a warranty if you're gonna hold on to your car for more than 4 years. Getting your car covered by Car Shield is the way that I have protected myself. It's affordable protection that can save you thousands of dollars for covered repair. New fuel pump, $500. Replacing the water pump, $1,000. You know, you have to do anything serious, and yeah, it's just not worth it. Unless you have an extended warranty. They have plans with Car Shield that will cover your car's computer, your GPS, the electronics, absolutely everything. Car Shield, the ultimate in extended coverage, and you can get your favorite mechanic or the dealership. They pay them directly, so you don't have to wait for a check. Sign up today, get 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is in the shop. Save yourself from high repair bills. Do what I do. I have Car Shield. Get it before something goes wrong. Call 1-800-CAR-6100. 1-800-CAR-6100. You mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com and use the promo code Beck. You'll save an additional 10%. Carshield.com, promo code Beck. Deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Now, before we finish this hour, we started this hour with Scott Hamilton, you know, the Olympic gold medalist skater, the commentator during the Olympics, the guy who just, he makes skating so much fun to watch. But he's written a new book called Finish First, winning challenge, changes everything. And in it, it's a woodshed book. It's a, something that in a nice way says, stop it. Not everybody is a winner. You, by having that attitude, you most likely are going to end up being a loser. But everybody has that potential inside of them. You just have to find it and fulfill your purpose. It's really, really good and a great message. But I'm just talking personally here. I've always heard he was a nice guy, but I was... very few times do you meet people who really look you in the eye, who are assessing you. You know what I mean? it's a weird, you know, kind of a communicate. You know when somebody is looking you in the eye and they're assessing and they're speaking to you. You know, he's just very sincere and really nice guy. Really nice guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hear his personal story. I think that's the type of thing that makes you into that person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have a lot of struggles and a lot of real challenges and a lot of personal revelations. And, you know, maybe you take the world a little bit more seriously and look for things that are more real.
Yeah. And but it's hard to do without guile or, you know, bitterness or self-pity. And he didn't have any of that. Doesn't have any of that in him.
No, certainly doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me, and I would love to hear your comment on, he's really short.
It's true. And he mentioned that himself.
Yeah.
That's probably really good for a figure
for skating.
Skater,
yeah,
right?
Well, he said, I mean, that was, you know, it was due to an illness when he was a kid, but he's a diminutive
figure. I mean,
that's a weird thing to. I guess he's so
because you don't, at least with me, when you're talking to him and when you look him in the eye, his size does not matter. You know, he's in a nice way. He's an intimidating guy. And it has nothing to do with size.
As they say, height don't measure heart, Glenn.
Okay, I've never heard that before. But,
yeah, I have.
Maybe because I'm 6'3", so maybe that's what mothers tell their short kids like you.
What do they tell you about waist size they measure? What that measures?
Yeah, that I can sit on you and crush you.
That's hurtful.
I know. We all make mistakes. And mine was not sitting on you and crushing you many years ago. Back in a second with a look at Uranium One and the FBI scandal with the Clintons.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
I don't care a rat's flying butt about the Oscars. I don't know anybody who does. It's Hollywood. However, this is kind of interesting to point out here. Yesterday, they released the nominations, and a movie called Call Me By Your Name was nominated for Best Picture. Now, this is, I think, the most hypocritical nomination I've ever seen from Hollywood, and that is quite a feat. It deserves an Oscar for their hypocrisy. If you haven't heard of this movie, you're probably in good company. Most of America hasn't heard of it. I saw a trailer for it before the Winston Churchill movie. Here's what it is. Call Me By Your Name is a new fashion romantic weepy about a 17-year-old boy who is seduced by and has a sexual relationship with an older man who is spending time with in the summer with the boy's family. Now, this started to unfold in front of me on the screen, and I'm like, several issues with this. Critics, you know, contractually obliged to, you know, love this movie. They're obligated to say, oh, this is, quote, ravishing filmmaking and piercing wisdom, right? Huffington Post says the actors who play the lovers, some of the richest chemistry I've ever witnessed in a movie. It's sublime. Anybody uses the word sublime? Or not, my friend. Esquire says the movie has some of the most emotional moments in film history. Two problems here. First, the plot. It is romanticizing what would qualify as statutory rape in the U.S. Oh, but it's set in Italy and things are so open-minded in Italy. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Wait a minute. Kevin Spacey, he was just having sex with the American kids and none of the Italian kids. Okay. I got the difference here. I got it. Just a few months with the, you know, into the hashtag Me Too movement. You know, and the everybody's wearing a black dress, and oh my gosh, I'm so for this. Roy Moore is such a monster, and Kevin Spacey, he's a monster. And now you're celebrating a movie about an older man who's seducing a teenage boy? I mean, didn't you just delete Kevin Spacey from, I don't even know if he is even alive anymore. He's just been deleted. Kevin Spacey. Who's Kevin Spacey? I've never heard of Kevin Spacey. We can generalize about the Hollywood community here because the entire Academy votes for Best Picture. So it's not just a small community. This is the Academy voting to excuse and endorse a movie about sex between an adult and a teenager. Why don't we do the Roy Moore story? Why don't we do that one? Oh, I remember, right? Because we have a problem with that. Why don't we do the Kevin Spacey story? Oh, I remember. Because we're against that. As a business community, I don't get it. as a cultural force in this country, Hollywood, you have zero credibility, and you're going into the negative scale. I mean, I'm going to have to put you on the Kelvin scale here soon, because I don't know how much colder you can get. How do you type your hashtag? How do you wear your black protest dress and then nominate the Kevin Spacey story for Best Picture? How do you do that? Here's the thing, Hollywood. You know, maybe you misunderstand this phrase. People always say you can't have your cake and eat it too. I prefer to always say it this way. You can't eat your cake and have it too. You can't have both of them. If the hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up, really, if that's more than a slogan or a fad to you, then you actually have to put it, you know, into action. Apologies, changes, they don't mean anything without action. Who you choose to work with, your story content, the movies you nominate for awards. Right now, I don't see Time's Up. Right now, all I see is hashtag hypocrisy.
It's Wednesday, January 24th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV, we're going to be talking about the Uranium One scandal. And this is all tied in to everything that is happening with the FBI. And it really, last night, you started to see how the FBI was involved in this. And tonight, you're going to see the amazing coincidence of all of the Uranium One Russians suddenly giving huge donations to the Clinton Foundation. It is amazing.
Look, we all make charitable donations. Sometimes there's tax deductions that you're looking for. You know, it's a wonderful charity. There's great things all around the world. It's just a coincidence.
Yeah. Last night, we went in. Do we have any clips from last night?
Yeah.
Last night, we went into what the FBI, just the beginning of what the FBI had on these Russians and the role that they were playing in bribing our politicians. Soon as Clinton gets involved, it all kind of goes awry and nobody pays attention. But the FBI had been working for years on this scandal.
The $5 million was padded to include the kickback payments for McCarran and several other Rosatom executives back in Moscow. So they would get the $5 million contract without competing bids from other companies, pocket the $4.75 million, do the trucking job, and the executives would get the remaining. It all went to McCarran and his buddies. Well, what they would do is they would take that extra money. It was dirty money now. They had to clean it up. So they took that money and they laundered it in banks all around the globe so the Russians could properly launder the money. Once the money is clean, well, McCarran and his buddies would get all the money they needed. These were American companies making illegal deals with Russia for the handling of nuclear material. In the old days, that was called treason. That would put you in jail. But in the Obama years, it was just called pressing the reset button.
That was from last night's chalkboard, and you can watch it on demand now if you're a subscriber at theblaze.com/TV. Tonight, we go into Russia. One-fifth of U.S. uranium resources, with the permission of the U.S. government, even though we knew they were engaged in, I'm quoting the FBI, illegal schemes and bribery. We allowed them to take one-fifth of our enriched uranium. And this enriched the Russians, and it enriched people like the Clintons. And tonight we'll show you the Clinton connection. There is a good story that, well, they never talked to anybody. They never did anything. No, they didn't. They sure didn't do anything. anything, and neither did the FBI. Something is really wrong. And it's wrong on this Uranium One scandal. It is wrong with the Trump scandal. I mean, if Trump did something wrong with the Russians, I want to know about it. If Trump did something wrong to obstruct justice, I want to know about it. If Clinton did something wrong, I want to know about it. And I want them both held to exactly the same standard. But I think what's really happening here is the FBI. There is something wrong in the Justice Department. Let me just go through what everybody in the press seems to be ignoring here. The two lovebirds, we lost their text messages. And the media wants to minimize this. Let me just lay out the facts. Mark Meadows did this in a Twitter thread. Let me lay out the facts here for you. The key figure, Peter Strzok, he's the FBI. He is the former deputy of counterintelligence at the FBI. So he's the deputy of counterintelligence. He's the guy that's responsible into looking into things like Russia. He's the guy, the guy who ran the 2016 Clinton investigation. So he is the man who was looking into that. He interviewed key witnesses, including Cheryl Mills, Uma Abedin, and Hillary Clinton. Strzok, remember that. Now we have these anti-Trump texts in 2016 from Peter Strzok, the same guy. And he's talking about having some sort of, quote, insurance policy in case Trump gets elected. We have the text from Strzok and his woman that he was having an illicit affair with, somebody who was it Strzok's wife or was it Lisa Page's husband that worked at Fusion GPS? There's the connection there. Anyway, Strzok and Lisa Page in their text messages say, we can't take the risk that Trump will win the presidency. Just that by itself is a huge red flag. But there's more. We now have text between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, both FBI agents, directly talking about the pressure to finish the Hillary Clinton investigation, a text which occurred right after Donald Trump became the GOP nominee or the presumptive GOP nominee. We have a text. It's from May 4th, 2016, where Peter Strzok writes his lover and says, who's also FBI, high level, now the pressure really starts to finish MYE. What is MYE? MYE is midterm exam. That was the code name for the Clinton investigation. He's mid-year exam. He's the guy who's doing it. He's viscerally anti-Trump. He wants an insurance policy. When Trump gets the nomination, he says, we need some sort of insurance policy. Boy, now the pressure is really on for me to finish this. Okay. Bad, right? But now it really gets worse. Peter Strzok, deputy of FBI counterintelligence, lead Clinton investigator, who's blasting Trump in a text message, talking about the need to end the Clinton investigation right after he knew that Hillary would be running against Trump, who he says we need an insurance policy to make sure he doesn't get in. Now, let's complete the circle here with FBI Director Comey. Do you remember Comey's exoneration letter of Hillary Clinton? The letter from 2016. The way Comey wrote it, Hillary Clinton was grossly negligent, but it was mysteriously changed to extremely careless. The question is, why? Maybe the better question is, what difference does it make? Gross negligence, under the reasonable person standard in the law, is a crime. Extreme carelessness is not. So the change makes one crime, one just, I was just sloppy. Had Director Comey called Hillary grossly negligent in his letter, he would have been saying she committed a crime. But it was changed. Let's go back to Peter Strzok. We have email documentation that suggests the gross negligent claim in Director Comey's exoneration letter was changed to extremely careless between May 4th and May 6th by Peter Strzok. Now think about how important this is. A text from Peter Strzok talking about the pressure to end the Clinton investigation, then within 48 hours, he changes the Comey letter from criminal charges to carelessness. I don't know about you, but that doesn't seem right. There is something wrong here. If this was a white and black issue, my gosh, this would be the front page everywhere. If this was a male versus female gender equality thing, we'd be hearing nothing about it. But because it has been made into partisan politics, we're all willing just to overlook it. We're willing to look at the Hillary problem. The left is willing to look at the Trump problem. Who's left looking at the FBI and Russia problem? Because that's what this is really all about. This is not about party politics. Now, you do have to add a couple of things. There's a couple of other questions. The Carter Page FISA application, which they still will not produce for Congress. The 5 months of mysteriously missing Page and Strzok texts. The FBI communicating with Fusion GPS. And the DNC hired Christopher Steele. There is at least a significant... You know what? When's the last time that you watched All the President's Men? When's the last time you even researched Watergate? I watched it with my daughter Mary this weekend. And we sat down and we watched Watergate. And these reporters didn't even know what they had. It wasn't until the very end when Deep Throat is standing there in the garage going, "You don't even know. You have no idea where what this is about. Well, it's about the money. It's about that lawyer in California." No, it's not. The entire government is involved in this. It's the FBI. It's the CIA. It's the White House. Remember that? They spent years on Watergate before they even thought it was connected to the White House. Where are these good journalists today? I feel like, I mean, deja vu. I remember saying, "Hey, left, you really don't want to give the president this kind of power, because at some point, a guy you don't like and doesn't like you will use these same kind of unconstitutional things and you ain't gonna like it." You have got to clean up the Justice Department and the FBI, because someday the shoe could be on the other foot and you're not going to like it. I want to talk to you about SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe has come up with a new security. They've redesigned their entire security system, and it is really, really great. It's been completely rebuilt, redesigned. They've added new safeguards to protect against power outages, downed Wi-Fi, cut landlines. I mean, they've taken bats and hammers to this. It is really strong. It's really small and simple. The redesign is practically invisible, so it's very, very small. You're barely even going to notice it. Certainly the burglars won't, until it's, you know, alerted police and set off the alarm and taken their picture. Now, what's remarkable about this is, if you look at this compared to anything that you're wiring, the amount of money that you're going to save is staggering, staggering. And the price of protection, if you want it every month, there's no contract. It's $15 a month, $14.99. Come on. It's smaller, it's faster, it's stronger than anything they've built before. Supply is limited. Visit SimplySafeBeck.com right now. See this new technological wonder from SimplySafe. It's SimplySafeBeck.com. Protect your home and your family. SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to it. Glad you're here. Just looking at some of the tweets and the email that has come in. Carol Roa says, hope this indictment puts the Clintons away for life. They've gotten away with too many crimes. She's talking about the chalkboard series. Steve Waters, always fascinating watching you put the pieces together and sharing, Glenn. This is where you do your best work. Gail wrote and said, I love your chalkboard explanations. You explain things the blind can't see. It is such a
That's everything. That's by definition, a blind person can't see anything. So explaining things that the blind people can't see is just explaining a thing.
Yeah. Thank you. So
I love ruining things.
I know.
Really important point.
Yes, it was.
Really
it
important
was. Point. Well, I mean, if that's what, that's what you, if she, you explain things the blind don't see, that's all things. By definition, a blind person is not seeing anything. So therefore,
Sue writes in and she says,
you really clarified it again.
Our entire government is out of control and the entire media is silent. How is it that not one person, let alone hundreds, aren't in prison in our government right now? I don't know, but I'll have to ask the blind man or maybe the deaf man, because I can also put things in words that the deaf just cannot hear.
But that's all things, Glenn. The deaf person can't.
Let's not
break that down further later on the program.
I'll get a chalkboard on that.
So are you buying into the secret society and the FBI and all that?
Did you hear Ron Johnson?
No.
Okay, listen, Sarah, please play the cut of Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson.
That secret society, we have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. There's so much smoke here. There's so much suspicion.
Let's stop there. A secret society, the secret meetings off-site of the Justice Department.
Correct.
And you have an informant saying that?
Yes.
Wow.
Is there anything more about that?
No, we have to dig into it. This is not a distraction. Again, this is bias, potentially corruption at the highest levels of the FBI that is now investigating.
Again, are we talking about a Moose Lodge meeting with a little bowling action going on? Or, you know, is it Skull and Bones Yale Society?
Doesn't even have
stuff?
To be that. It just has to
I don't know.
It has to be people that are following the idea that was expressed in those text messages. We need an insurance policy. How do we stop this guy from being president?
Yeah.
If they had
a society to do that, that is,
I mean, I don't think
huge.
They printed up cards or, you know, had a logo made, but if there was, you know, a group
of
people.
What kind of self-respecting secret society wouldn't have at least a logo? Come on.
Yeah, you got to have a logo.
You got to have a logo.
That's a government.
You have to.
A government. The secret society. Yes. Actually, they would have one designed that would have cost the taxpayers $100 million. But anyway, so we have that. There's also some interesting news from Joe Biden, who is, by the way, we're joined by Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze in about 22 minutes from now. Joe Biden seems to be coming out at lunch bucket Joe.
Yeah.
And just talking common sense.
He's clearing out the legacy a little bit for that 2020 run.
Yeah.
He's planning, making sure that you know that the things that you didn't like about the Obama administration.
He was against
those things. So you're aware.
Oh, boy.
Just so you're aware.
We're talking about middle class Joe, right?
Middle class Joe.
Oh, yeah. Lunch bucket Joe. Because
that's what everyone calls him.
Yeah, everybody calls him middle class.
Shoeless Joe. You know, I'm just like you, Joe, is what I like to call him.
That is one of the most revealing things about a politician I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
When you've never heard anybody but him call himself something, and then that's what he uses all the time. You know, people call me middle class Joe,
and they went back.
I've never heard anybody call you that.
Right? Yeah, they actually went back in the archives to find the first person who to call him middle class Joe, and
it was
Joe Biden.
Yeah,
it was him
Joe.
Calling himself that.
It's so good. He's amazing. Anyway, here's cut one. Joe Biden
went up, and Mitch McConnell, who I get on with well and is a smart guy, Mitch McConnell wanted no part of having a bipartisan commitment that we would say, essentially, Russia's doing this, stop. Bipartisan. So it couldn't be used as a weapon against the Democratic nominee of a president trying to use the intelligence community, which now at the time people would say no, when we were internally having these discussions, say no one would do that. Well, look what the hell they've done. The constant attack is on the intelligence community. It was a political organization run by, you know, Barack Obama for to take on his political enemies. Now, you know, as a friend of mine in Scranton would say, who would have thunk it? But it was done.
Friend of mine in Scranton.
And so there was this constant tightrope is being walked here as to what would we do. So the second big play was we went in and said, OK, look, here's all the data. And Brennan and company came up and said, here's what we know. Why don't we put out a bipartisan warning to Russia? Hands off, man, or there's going to be a problem. Democrat and Republicans. Well, they would have no party. They have no part of it. That, to me, hanging around that body up there for a longer than any of you were around doing it, meant to me that this was the die had been cast here. This was all about the political play.
So what you're supposed to get out of that is people were critical of the Obama administration for not coming out and talking about Russia during the campaign.
Right.
And Joe wanted to. It just
was. And so did Barack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just what, you know, it was a fault of the Republicans. What you should take out of that is it's an amazing admission of cowardice.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying they thought that they should come out and say something about Russia, but because they couldn't get political cover from Mitch McConnell, they decided to let our electoral process just hang out there in the wind and not warn anyone about it because it might look bad for them. As a president, that's your job. You're supposed to be able to risk the political pushback and come out and say the thing that's tough to say that's good for the country. So I think he's trying to get away with one there, and I don't think it works at all. Did it work on you, Pat?
Not really, no.
No.
I love the fact that he said it at the Council of Foreign Relations.
I do, too. I was just seeing
that.
If you watch it on the Blaze TV,
unbelievable.
You're seeing him, you know, in this talk of secret societies.
He's at that CFR. Jeez.
It's not
perfect.
It's not the best image there.
No.
Can we play Biden on Libya as well? Here's another one. Now, look, you know what happened with Libya. Barack Obama went in there, but he wants you to know that was not lunch bucket Joe.
No.
That was not
middle class Joe.
No, not middle class Joe.
Okay.
No.
Or lunch bucket. Huh. Or shoeless.
Or Scranton
he's
Joe.
He's just like you, Joe.
Okay. Okay. Here's Biden on Libya.
There will be a lot written about Libya and why some one of us thought it was a tragic mistake, the policy we undertook. No, I'm serious. It's now public, but it was. I don't think that's the total cause, but it added to the perception on the part of Moscow as to what our intentions were.
I mean, that's why some one of us thought it was a mistake. I mean, that is he really wants to be president.
He's clearing the territory for the run, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what you would expect from I make $45,000 a year on a sliding scale. That's probably the top I make now. And I've always been right just below you or people like you, Joe.
You're talking about middle class Joe?
Yes.
OK.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Yes. All right. I thought so.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. It was really a tragedy that he's not already our president, because, you know, if he ran, people would have understood that he's from Scranton, he's got a lunch bucket, and he's middle class, and that's a path to victory.
It would have gone a long way.
That is a path to victory.
It would have, yeah.
Yeah, but he's white and a male.
I don't like white people. I'll say that. I don't. I do not like them.
None of us do.
I do not like them.
There's too much privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I check my privilege.
Too
at
much
the door.
Hatred.
I check my privilege at the door every day. I come in and somebody says, privilege, please. And I say, it's outside.
And yet your skin came with you. So.
Well, I'm trying hard.
Okay.
I'm trying hard.
Pat, I also wanted to get your reaction to the tragedy in Alabama. Obviously, a really sad situation there. You know, in Montgomery, they had the candlelight vigil last night. Really sad as they said goodbye to the Taco Bell that burned down last week.
I mourned along with them.
You did.
I did.
You did. It's really tragic. It started out apparently as a joke until more than 100 people showed up.
That would have been us too.
Oh,
we would have
led that thing.
As a Taco Bell burns down, they have a candlelight vigil to quote, talk
so
about
great.
The stand together in the loss of our beloved Taco Bell and to share their memories of Taco Bell.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
The owners are overwhelmed by the displays of support, and it is unclear what caused the fire, but they do plan to rebuild, which is good, because we are only days away. In fact, tomorrow, I believe, is the day.
Is this the French fries thing?
The Taco Bell French fries are debuted with nacho cheese dipping sauce,
right,
and also loaded with all sorts of, Bel Grande-type toppings on top of the fries.
These are the kind of things that are going to allow me to ignore the secret society at the FBI. Yeah.
It turns you around a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the story about the guy who actually worked in this building for years? We're from the Mercury Studios in Las Colinas, Texas. Used to be the old Paramount Studios. And every episode of Barney was filmed here. Stu knows.
Yeah.
Have you heard the latest on what the guy who did Barney, so to speak, every episode of Barney, the guy inside the costume, have you heard what his new gig is?
No.
Look, everyone has to, you don't just die when your main career ends. Mm-hmm. You got to move on to something else, something mm-hmm. important, something maybe you've dreamed about doing your whole mm-hmm. life.
Yes. He is offering a full session of a tantra massage and some spiritual healing. Mm-hmm. It lasts 3 to 4 hours, costs $350, female clients only. And he gives you a ritual bath.
Mm-hmm. A ritual bath?
You're going to have a ritual bath.
You have to go to the website. It is hysterical.
Do it on Jeffy's computer, though.
He is dead serious. Chakra balancing.
A second chakra? Is this an outdoor situation?
Yeah, no. He's going to balance those chakras for you. And also, cosmic mind-blowing orgasms.
It is a tantric sex business.
Mm-hmm.
The Barney
mm-hmm.
guy.
And
wow.
I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you can figure it out. He says, when the lingam and the yoni meet, there's a certain energy that takes place that the hands on the body cannot create.
That's stupendous.
You have to read because he talks about
the
energy flow that he was trying to channel through Barney the whole time. This guy is, he's basically running a prostitution thing, but he worked with an attorney to figure out, how do I not go to jail for prostitution? And he's come up with it, and he's dead serious.
I'd like to know how many clients he's going to get through the door. Zero? I mean, this is for women, right?
No, he says.
Women aren't going there.
He says.
Would be my guess.
He says it's spiritually draining for him, and he can only take on 7 clients a week.
More on the inner workings of tantric sex and its industry with Pat Gray Unleashed today at Pat Unleashed on Twitter, and you can get it on theblaze.com/TV or theblaze.com/radio.
Liberty Safe. They're making the best built safes on the planet, bar none, and they're made here in America. And they will relabel a lot of. You go to Cabela's; those are Liberty Safes. But the Liberty Safe that is built here in America is just so. Let's put it this way: we have in our museum we have a ton of stuff from. Judy Garland's other pair of ruby slippers to George Washington's compass to God only knows what. We keep them in Liberty Safes because we know it ain't going anywhere. We've seen them picked up in tornadoes and dropped two blocks away, and they're still closed. We have seen the testing. You got to go to libertysafe.com and just see the testing. It's hysterical. We've seen competitor safes dropped on Liberty Safe from 2 stories above, and the competitor opens up, but Liberty doesn't. They are built to last and to protect whatever it is, from your guns to your valuables to your papers and your photographs. Liberty Safe. They have a great price now. You can receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. I've never seen them do this before. They even offer the Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. $20 a month. Liberty Safe. Nothing like owning a Liberty Safe and having the peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery service, and it is all unmatched in the industry. Get yourself a Liberty Safe now with 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit. You have valuables. You have things that need protecting either from robbers or from fire or, you know, the tornadoes or whatever. Liberty Safe. Go to libertysafe.com, the home of the best-built safes on the planet, bar none. It is libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Today, part three of our look into the FBI, Russia, and the Clintons on Uranium One. Today, we get to the Clinton coincidence, which is pretty jaw-dropping. You don't want to miss it tonight at 5 o'clock. Also, we're going to start the program with a quick explanation of one of the things that I have been looking for with the economy, and that is velocity of money. That's what causes inflation. And we have been priming the pump, and these, not the tax cuts, but the repatriation cuts, the billions and billions of dollars that has been laying offshore that now is coming flooding back into the country because Trump gave 15% tax cut. It's really good and really good for many, many people. However, is this going to kick off the velocity that could cause real problems because the Fed primed the pump with about $7 trillion in bogus money? We'll get into that and look at the numbers right at the top of the show at 5 o'clock, and then the chalkboard on the Clintons, the FBI, and Russia. You need to watch it tonight.
So you're saying perhaps printing trillions of dollars of money out of thin air is not the best policy?
No, this time it's different.
Oh, this time it's going to be different?
Time it's different.
Because I was worried, but then it's going to be different.
Every other time it has failed and gone horribly awry.
Oh.
This time, it's different.
Oh, good.
5 o'clock, theblaze.com/TV.
Glenn,
join and
Beck,
share.
Mercury.